And so what did he say on that voicemail?
Said he's been trying to train me for 2 or 3 months, and that they're going to release me.
In this week's Nolan from Adam podcast, we sit down with the new Baltimore Ravens wide receiver, Jeremy Maclin. And we sit down with the old Carolina Panthers tight end, Greg Olsen. Maclin recently signed a 2-year deal with the Baltimore Ravens. There's been some talk and speculation that Greg Olsen could wind up with a new deal in Carolina. We discuss contracts, longevity of careers, and plenty of issues with both players, starting with Jeremy Maclin. What has the last few weeks been like for you? How did we get to here to where you're playing for the Baltimore Ravens?
You know, it's been kind of fast-paced, you know, especially with everything that happened in KC and kind of the whole process and going on visits and, you know, ultimately finding a home in Baltimore. You know, it's been kind of fast. I think everything's kind of slowing down a little bit. You know, we had a, you know, good couple of days of practice. I was able to get some work in with Joe and the offense, and, you know, not everything seems to be exactly how it should be. So,
have you ever had a period in your life where more has changed in a short period of time? You got married, you got released, you moved to Baltimore.
No. I would say I haven't had an eventful couple of weeks like that before. But, you know, I think everything happens for a reason. So I'm excited about it, man. I actually am. I'm excited about it.
When they released you, Jeremy, you said crazy business. What do you mean by that exactly?
That it is what it is. It's a business. And you know, you can't lose sight of that. And, you know, maybe I was at a place where I thought that, you know, the personal relationships, you know, would overshadow the business part of it a little bit. And maybe that's partially my fault. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, you just can't lose sight of the fact that it is a business. You know, and things are made business minded. It's not whether they like you or whether they, you know what I mean? It's a business. So,
did you have any sense at all that they were going to release you on that Friday when they did?
No, I had no idea.
And is it true that they left you a voicemail message to let you know of that news?
Yeah, you know, so I said today that I wouldn't want to talk about it anymore, but I kind of want to clear something up. So they left me a voicemail. John did. You know, I was en route to go down to Fletcher Cox football camp in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And I was on a flight, so clearly he couldn't get to me. So, you know, he left me a voicemail. But the issue is they released me so late on Friday, I wouldn't become a free agent until Monday anyways. So I would at least think that, you know, have the respect for me enough to at least have a conversation with me. You know what I mean? Not really find out through a voicemail. So I think that's where, in my opinion, the problem, or it really is just the business. You know what I mean? Because I feel like if it was anything else, you know, especially not being able to become a free agent until Monday, at least have a conversation with somebody, you know?
And so what did he say on that voicemail?
Said he's been trying to train me for 2 or 3 months, and that they're going to release me.
And what was your reaction when you heard that?
The same thing. I was shocked. You know, it was a little... it caught me by surprise. You know, there's a whole bunch of different type of emotions that go on when something like that happens. You know, but eventually, you know, you kind of sit back and you think about the situation and you think about everything that happened and you deal with it and you move on. So I think I got to that place faster maybe than normal because of the way I was released. I feel like that's not very... You know, it was wrong. So, I mean, but at the end of the day, you know, they're entitled to do whatever they want to do.
Now, what was the recruiting process like when you were a free agent? Because you get to go visit anywhere you want. You go visit Buffalo. You go visit Baltimore. There were some discussions with Philadelphia. What stood out to you about that process?
You know, I know it sounds good, but everything, you know, just, you know, the Baltimore's always been a place, you know, organization that I've always had respect for from afar. And clearly, I've never been here prior to this. I had never played here prior to this. But you just respect the organization. You respect how they do things. You respect the players that have come from there, that have played there. And then you respect Harbs. You know, Harbs was in Philly before I got there, and me hearing some of the stories about him and how everybody loved him as a coach. You know, these are the type of things as, you know, whenever you do become free agents or in situations like that, and, you know, these are kind of things that stick with you. So I immediately, and knowing the situation there on offense, you know, immediately that was a place that kind of, you know, highlighted for me in my head. So
now, in your first 4 years in the league with Philadelphia, 2009 to 2012, your offensive coordinator was Marty Morningwig, and he is the offensive coordinator in Baltimore. How much did that factor into this at all?
It definitely played a part, knowing that I already knew the offense. I already had a good grasp of kind of what they wanted to do on the offensive side of the ball. And I know Marty. Marty's a good dude. He has a very, very great offensive mind. He has a good knack of putting guys in position to be successful with the ball in their hands. And I know that he uses everybody. So this was a place that definitely stood out. And Marty was definitely one of the reasons.
And Jeremy, is it true your wife is from Baltimore?
She is. She grew up here. Well, not really grew up here. She lived here until she was like 9 or 10. Yep. Still has family here. But then she ended up moving to Philly. Jersey, I'm sorry, after that.
So she still has family in the Baltimore area. Did that influence your decision at all?
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, she's a this is a decision that we made together. And knowing that she has family here, knowing that she has people here that she can, you know, hang out with, talk to, spend time with when I'm at work. And, you know, some of these long training camp days, you know, so she's not going to be alone. So, yeah, that definitely played a part.
Jeremy, it's nice to see you've already caught on to the ways of being a married man and knowing what's important in impressing and making sure that your wife is happy. Happy wife, happy life.
Yeah, happy wife, happy life, for sure.
I think one of the most underrated factors that people don't factor into consideration when players like yourself become free agents is what the wife wants. How much is that a factor usually, and when players are making decisions, to your knowledge?
I have no idea. I would assume that, you know, everybody is different case by case. You know, I'm sure, like, my wife, you know, from day one, you know, she always said there's something about Baltimore. And as kind of as the process went on, as everything kind of, you know, unfolded, she just kept saying everything always led her back to Baltimore. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, she also said in the same breath that, you know, she can be fine no matter where we go. But, you know, she always told me that, you know, babe, there's something about Baltimore. So,
and so we have it. Now, you brought up the fact that you've had the chance to work with Joe at camp during OTAs here since you signed with Baltimore. What has stood out about him?
Tremendous arm strength. You know, he's a very, very intelligent guy. Very, very cool guy, too. But he can make every throw in the book. He just knows how to play football. And I think, you know, just having that and being able to, even in 2 days I was here, you know, getting some work with him and us really being on the same page, especially today, you know, you couldn't ask for a better situation. So, you know, there's a reason why he won a Super Bowl, you know, so he can flat out play.
You said very cool. Why very cool?
He's just a cool dude, man. They call him Joe Cool for a reason.
Now, what should fans, Ravens fans, fantasy football fans, fans in general, expect out of Jeremy Maclin this upcoming season in that Baltimore offense?
I think we can be explosive as a unit. You know, I'm not going to throw out numbers or anything, but, you know, I think there's a reason why they wanted me to come here. And if I'm, you know, going to be a big part of offense like I think I should be, you know, those numbers are come. So, but as a unit, I think we'll be explosive. I think we got, you know, two other, you know, good receivers that can play ball. And, you know, you got a group of running backs. You got Danny coming out the backfield as well. So I'm excited about it. I am excited about it.
When you get released like that, when somebody tells you basically we don't want you, how much of that is a motivating factor going forward for the season ahead?
Yeah, you know, I'm not big on that type of stuff, but I said earlier, you know, that flame that that burns inside you as a competitor. You know, by what happened to me, that flame got a little bigger, a little brighter, for sure. So I'm eager to get out there.
How do you respond to the people, and this was out in the press after you were released, that you had lost a step, whatever that means? How do you respond to that, Jeremy?
Well, my groin last year, so if I'm supposed to be just as fast with a torn groin, then, I mean, no power to him. But, I guess I just got to wait and see. You know, I don't really have anything else to say about that. You know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. I'll still be able to get open. I'll still be able to make big play, that's for sure.
But last year you played with a torn groin?
It was torn. Yeah, it was torn.
And when did you tear it, and how long did you have to play with that for? Tell me a little bit about that, because I don't think that's been out there either, Jeremy.
No, so I missed about 4 weeks there with the torn groin, and I came back, and yeah, well, I was able to play, but I can't sit up here and tell you I was 100%. But I'm also not going to sit up here and make excuses. So, I at the end of the day, I didn't play as well as I could have last year, and yep. I think that's ultimately what happened. So,
not to make excuses, but how much do you think that did impact you last year? How much did you feel it?
You can feel it, but at the end of the day, like I said, I gotta play better. So I'm not that type of guy to lean my hat on that. That's not who I am. So
you didn't need surgery on it after the season, or you did?
I did not get surgery.
Okay, and how's it feeling today? Are you fully healed from that injury?
I'm 100% ready to go.
Is there anything else about this process over the last few weeks, Jeremy, that did surprise you and did open your eyes?
No, nothing that hasn't been said or hasn't been reported. Like I said, it is a business. I understand how this thing works. I still got respect for Big Red, always will, always has. And, life goes on. You know, everything happens for a reason. I'm actually extremely excited about where I am now and the situation I'm in now. And I'm just ready to play some football, man.
Have you already hit up Jimmy Seafood for free crab cakes for life, Jeremy?
Oh, they know that I've been asking. I gotta get over there next week.
Have you ever had those crab cakes from that place before?
I have not.
So this will be the first time you sample them. So last thing on this podcast, and I want to thank you for taking the time, Jeremy. I appreciate it. We always ask our guests three separate questions. First question: last time you cried?
Last time I cried, at my wedding, just hearing the music and watching my wife come down the aisle.
Last dinner, what would be your last meal if you could have last meal? And being that you haven't eaten the Jimmy Seafood crab cakes just yet, I don't think it would be that. But what would be your last meal if it were your last meal on earth?
My last dish would have to be my mom's sweet potatoes.
That good, huh?
Yeah, it's real.
What's so good about them? What's so real about them?
Probably how unhealthy they are, but they're so good.
Well, we can't be eating a lot of sweet potatoes and playing with a torn groin if we're going to operate to maximum capacity next season.
I got you.
And then the last thing, Jeremy, is if you were going to have that last meal of those sweet potatoes, who are the four people that would be invited to have them with you?
You got to go wife.
Yep. One.
You got to go real mom. You got to go my surrogate mom. And then you got to go probably my surrogate pops.
Good for you, Jeremy. That'd be quite a dinner. Well, I appreciate taking some time to join us. Thank you very much. Lots of luck in Baltimore. Enjoy the crab cakes and enjoy Joe Flacco.
Appreciate you. Thank you,
Jeremy. That was Baltimore Ravens wide receiver Jeremy Maclin. Coming up, Carolina Panthers tight end Greg Olsen. Thank you very much for taking some time for me today on a quiet, sleepy June day.
All good, man. Happy to do it.
Are we all ready to head into the off season?
Ready. Wrapped up minicamp today. We're all officially off season's over.
So what do we have planned for the upcoming weeks until training camp begins?
We got one family trip. We got a wedding for a family friend out in, actually it's in Hawaii.
Ooh.
So we are going to do our first trip ever to Hawaii. So we're going to do a week out there, and then we'll be back here before the 4th, and we just you know, I'll go do my workouts and stuff during the day at the stadium, and then we'll just enjoy summer with the kids.
You've never been to Hawaii before?
Never been to Hawaii.
That's hard to imagine. I guess, wow, going to school in Miami, maybe there is no reason to get to Hawaii. But
yeah,
still.
You know, it was always one of those things. I promised my wife we would go. It was always like my incentive my whole career to make the Pro Bowl. And then the first year I made it, it was in Arizona. And then the next year I made it, it was in Hawaii, but we went to the Super Bowl. And then last year I made it, and it was in Orlando. So it hasn't worked out for us. So it took a wedding to get us there.
Well, what do you have planned while you're in Hawaii aside from the wedding?
Not a whole lot. We're going to spend the first half of the trip on the Big Island and just enjoy that with the kids and the people that are in town for the wedding. Some of the other guys on the team are flying out there too. And then we'll enjoy the wedding. The wedding's like a midday, like a midweek wedding. And then from there, we're going to fly to Oahu and go to the Disney, like the Disney Hawaii property that they have out there, hotel, and spend like a long weekend there before coming back mainland. So it's going to be good. We're going to stay at two different places, but I think the kids are going to love it.
Now, when you're on a vacation like this, do you work out at all? Or do you say, you know what, I'm taking a week to myself, be with my family. I'll worry about all this when I get back.
No, I'll try to at least get a workout, you know, one workout in a day. If not, I'd be a mental head case. especially this close to training camp. We don't typically do such long vacations this time of year. We typically do our vacations more in, you know, the February, March time frame, where you kind of can kick back a little bit without that stress of the upcoming season and training camp and all that. But we're making a special exception, obviously, to go to this wedding. So we're gonna. I'll just make the best of it while I'm out there. But yeah, if I sat around and drank pina coladas all day, I wouldn't be good to anybody when I got back.
You are now going into your 11th NFL season. Is it hard to imagine that much time already has passed since the Bears drafted you?
It's crazy. It's funny. This week, Ron Turner, who was the offensive coordinator that drafted me in Chicago, you know, ex-FIU head coach. Obviously, he's been around the league and been a, you know, been a college and pro coach for a long time. His son is our offensive assistant, so he spent the week with us. Ron did this week at minicamp, and me and him were actually just talking about the same thing. I mean, I remember like it was yesterday getting drafted, my first trip to Chicago, my first rookie minicamp, my first OTA, my first work. I mean, I remember it all vividly, and I was testing my memory of play calls and what we used to call things. So it was kind of fun. It was kind of a trip down memory lane with Ron this week, and we had a good time, and those are fond memories. But it's crazy, you know, going into my seventh season. I'm almost been in Charlotte now twice as long as I was in Chicago. So it's these years add up fast.
Well, as they say, the days go slow, the years go fast. It's very true. What stands out when you look back on the 10 years you've played so far? What stands out to you about this career? I mean, that's a very broad and ambiguous question. I know, Greg, there's so much there, but what jumps out to you about it?
You know, I think the biggest thing that I've hung my hat on is, you know, obviously I've played a lot of games and now a lot of years and, you know, maybe more games than most guys who play 11 just because I've been fortunate to not miss many. But I think the biggest thing for me is I've been able to get better as I've gotten older. And I think, you know, I always wonder if I knew now what I knew when I was 22 and didn't need to warm up and I could just walk out on a field and run forever, and now I got to take 45 minutes just to get ready for the warm up to practice. If I had the physical traits and the body that I had when I was 22, and maybe the mental capacity and the preparation and understanding the nuances of what it means to not only play this sport but play my position, you know, it'd be dangerous. And I think, you know, what I've learned is sometimes the mental approach, sometimes the professional approach of learning and having all those reps under your belt are more important than how fast you run and you know, how many 225 reps you can do. You know, there's so much more to playing at a high level than just your raw physical ability. And as my career has gone on, I think I've, you know, really learned that more and more as each year has passed.
Is that something you share with young guys like a Christian McCaffrey, like a Curtis Samuel, that basically there's a lot of mental aspects to this game, that there's the taking care of your body, the technique, all those things that have enabled you to play at such a high level for the 10 years?
you know, I try to be to those guys what I was very fortunate early in my career when I got drafted to Chicago. You know, I had that kind of that old veteran leader in my room with Desmond Clark, who was a very accomplished, legitimate NFL starter for years and was really the incumbent starter the year they drafted me. And from day one, he took me under his wing. There was never any animosity. There was never any, you know, look at this young kid coming in, first round pick, going to take my reps. You know, he did everything he could to show me the right way to practice, the right way to prepare. And, you know, and then became good friends. And I'll never forget, I was in working out one of my first couple OTAs. You're a rookie. You're trying to stay out of the way. And I'm on, like, the bench press or I'm on whatever the workout was. And all of a sudden I look up and it's Brian Urlacher. And he says, "Hey, you mind if I work in with you?" And I was like, "Yeah, you could have it. I mean, you're Brian Urlacher. You could have the whole weight room if you want." And, you know, just from that point on, really, you know, got to know Brian well. And, you know, there was no greater mentor, no better guy to look up to than him for how he went about his business, how he prepared, how he practiced, how he treated people, from the people making your food to the starting quarterback to the head coach. He treated everybody the right way and just treated them, you know, incredibly well. And those have been lessons that I've tried to, you know, keep in mind as these young guys come in, is I want to be to these guys what I was very fortunate to have my first couple of years in Chicago. So there's a lot that goes into playing, and I think you can either learn it yourself or hopefully listen to some older guys who have been down that road and really heed their advice.
We have a connection in Desmond Clark because I covered Desmond in Denver when he was drafted,
yep.
And he was kind enough to share his story with me of the father that he grew up with. You know the story of his dad, right?
I do.
Yeah, well, his dad was essentially shot between the eyes, lost his vision, and couldn't watch Desmond play. And it was really an inspiring story and the way he treated him. And it's great to hear that Desmond was that way with you, because I've seen enough veterans not be that way with young players, that the fact that he took time out and gave you some pointers, that's incredible. And Urlacher, I didn't know that he was that kind of guy either. I've met Brian. I've spent a little bit of time, but I don't know him that well. And that's, I guess, one of the reasons that he has excelled or did excel in the league as long as he did, correct?
No question. I mean, if you're starting a team and you're just talking about how your best players should act in the facility, how they should interact with the players on their team, how they should, you know, mentor young players, how they should show young players how we treat people, how we play, right? I mean, he really checked all those boxes. Mm-hmm. And really is that guy that if you could aspire your best players, right? Not only was he a good guy and a nice guy, but he's a first ballot Hall of Fame player. That's a rare combination. And, you know, I know as a young player, I was very thankful for that. I want to think at the time I realized how special that was. Maybe I took it for granted a little bit. Now, as I've gotten older, you realize that there's not a lot of guys like that who have that kind of combination of play and, you know, ability to relate and the way they conduct themselves in the building. You know, he was a special guy, and I'm forever, you know, I've told him a million times, you know, he's one of, if not the best thing that ever, you know, happened to my career, just because he got me off to such a good start, because I had somebody to just watch and somebody to try to be like. And, you know, it's still lessons and stuff that I hold with me now, you know, in year 11.
So how much longer do you want to play now that we're going into year 11, Greg?
You know, I'm under contract through year 12, so obviously I'd like to, you know, get through that. And, you know, if all things stay as they are, you know, I think I can play, you know, 15, 16 years. I think, you know, I've been very fortunate. You know, I have obviously played a lot of snaps and played a lot of games, so my mileage is high. But I've been very fortunate that I've been able to, you know, stay relatively healthy, you know, no major surgeries and stuff like that. And again, that could happen this year, right? There's no way to tell. But all things staying, you know, as they've been the last few years, you know, if I can continue to still enjoy my off-season program and still find ways to improve physically and mentally in the off-season and challenge myself, the seasons are easy. What's gotten harder, and what I've heard from a lot of guys I've spoken to, is, you know, it gets harder on February, you know, the end of February or the beginning of March to get up at 7 o'clock and go to the gym and work out and run. You know, there's so many other things you can be doing. And when I lose the urge and I lose the passion to do that, that's probably a sign that it's time to hang them up.
You know, it's amazing. You've started all 16 games each of the last 5 years. And I don't know if you know this, but you've played more snaps among all pass catchers, tight ends, wide receivers in the NFL since 2012. You've played 4,948 snaps. Next closest, Jason Witten at 4,905, Demaryius Thomas at 4,711, Larry Fitzgerald 4,669, but nobody has played more snaps than you. And I guess that goes back to what you're talking about, learning the little things, the mental approach, taking care of yourself, all those things, correct?
Absolutely, and there's so much more that goes into it. I mean, all those guys you just named are special guys in their own right. I mean, a guy that, you know, the second guy that you mentioned to be in the same category as him was a guy I've emulated since I was a young kid, and, you know, Jason Witten. He was, believe it or not, when I was a high school senior, I took one of my official visits to Knoxville, to the University of Tennessee, and Jason was actually my host. And, you know, so he was a kid that I knew from my high school days, and now the fact that he's still playing all these years later and playing at a high level and playing every single snap, like you just mentioned, you know, he's a guy that I've really tried to kind of pattern my career off of, the productivity, the consistency, the durability, you know, all those things that I've really tried to hang my hat on. You never see him out there, you know, trying to get all the attention. You never see him doing all the extra stuff. He's just in there to play well, and you can see he has that respect of everybody around him. That's always kind of been, you know, the model that I've tried to pattern my career off of. And but yeah, I mean, the training in the off season is a big part of it. How you keep your body, how you treat yourself, how are you willing to, you know, fight through injuries? Are you able to practice when you're hurt? Because if you can't practice when you're hurt, you're never going to play when you're hurt, right? So you almost got to get used to performing when you're uncomfortable. And, you know, there's just so many different components that go into, you know, having longevity, and not only having longevity, but still being able to produce at a high level.
You know, you brought up Jason Witten. He obviously is a much better tight end than recruiter. If he was recruiting here in Tennessee, and he didn't close the deal, and you went to Miami.
Winslow, I guess, was a better recruiter.
is that who recruited you to Miami?
Yeah, my hosts in Miami were. So I went to three official visits. So I ended up signing with Notre Dame initially out of high school. My older brother Chris and Anthony Fasano, who's still in the NFL, longtime NFL tight end, who's actually from back home by me in Verona, New Jersey. So I knew him since we were kids. Him and my brother were my hosts in Notre Dame. My host at Tennessee was Witten, and my host at Miami was Kellen Winslow and Eric Winston.
Wow.
So I had some good hosts, and initially my brother and Fasano won, but then ultimately Kellen Winslow Jr. and Eric Winston eventually won, because obviously I ended up trading places and going down there to Miami.
How come you traded places at that time?
So, you know, coming out, Miami was really the first place that offered me. I went down. Butch Davis was the coach, and my dad had known Greg Schiano for a long time. Greg Schiano, as a player, played for our rival high school that my dad coached, that eventually me and all my brothers went to. So my dad coached against Greg Schiano, the player, and he just knew Greg since he was a high school kid up through, you know, just being a Jersey guy and all that. So Greg was the defensive coordinator, so my dad brought us down. We went to a camp. I was entering my sophomore year in high school. Butch was the head coach. Larry Coker was the offensive coordinator at the time, and I just loved it. You know, I loved everything about it, the Bubba Franks and Shockey, and they were kind of revolutionizing tight ends, and I was a young kid just learning tight end, and, you know, I just really loved it. And then my older brother, Chris, eventually went and signed with the University of Notre Dame. So, you know, got to know him and his buddies and his recruiting class, and would go out to Notre Dame a lot to watch him play and all that. And, you know, just thought it would be kind of cool to go play with my brother and let my parents see the both of us. You know, we played all our high school lives together. He was only one grade ahead of me. And I got there that summer for summer workouts and two-a-days, and, you know, just realized pretty fast that it wasn't the right spot for me. It was just not where my heart was. And, you know, the fact that my brother was there wasn't going to make it, you know, the place I wanted to spend 4 years. So my dad called Larry to see if there was a scholarship available. There was. I drove home with my mom after freshman orientation. And a couple days later, me and my mom flew down to Miami, and the rest is history.
And that worked out okay, did it not?
It worked out great. Couldn't have worked out any better. I wish we would have won some more games. I think my big regret about, you know, college is, you know, playing for such an incredible guy like Larry Coker and the early success he had. When I signed there and came in as a freshman, we were just coming off the Ohio State loss. which would have been back-to-back national champions. And then, you know, we only made it back to one more BCS my freshman year, and then we had kind of a steady decline, which ultimately led in Larry being let go and kind of a low point of Miami football. So, that, you know, all things personally went great. I met my wife there. I have countless friends and amazing experiences. It was a great place. I got my degree. Yeah. You know, my one regret is I wish I wish we could have enjoyed some more success for a lot of reasons, but it just wasn't in the cards.
You talk about your regret there. What is there left for you to still accomplish at the NFL level, Greg?
You know, the thing is, it's funny, I actually think about that a lot. I think, you know, it's a big part of what keeps guys motivated. What is there? There's always got to be something to shoot for, right? Both personally and team wise. And, you know, I think the ultimate goal is, you know, we came up just short 2 years ago with that Super Bowl. I think, you know, we had a really prime opportunity. We had a really good team. We had an unbelievable natural chemistry that just worked. And on paper, I don't know if we were the best team in the league, but there was something about us that when it was game time, we just expected to win. And we were playing so well in the playoffs. You know, both our playoff games, we beat two incredible teams and we beat them fairly handily. I mean, to be up 30-something-0 against Seattle and then pretty much blow out Arizona, we really felt good and we just really laid an egg. It's an opportunity I think a lot of us look back on and say, you know, we really foiled it. So, I that Super Bowl, I think any player worth their salt, you know, wants to experience that joy of walking off knowing that all the work led to the ultimate reward. So I think, you know, that's number one on the list. You know, personally, you know, I'd like to string together some more 1,000-yard seasons. You know, I'd really like to challenge those top guys in the all-time numbers. You know, I'm closing in on some of those guys in catches and yards. You know, am I ever going to catch Gonzalez? I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to play 17 years. But you know, you got Gonzalez, Witten, and Shannon Sharp. You know, those three guys are pretty etched up there in the top three. But, you know, I think if I can have another solid couple years, you know, there's no reason that I can't be, you know, that next guy in line. And that's something that continues to motivate me on a personal level.
Now, you brought up being under contract through year 12, and there's been some buzz in the media recently about you wanting a new contract. I don't know whether you actually said that or whether somebody reported it. Could you clear up exactly what this is about right now, if you don't mind?
Yeah, so we had nothing to do with releasing that story. I came off minicamp field a couple days ago, and one of our local beat reporters in just the pool of media who was covering the day, you know, just asked me and said, hey, you know, you have 2 years left on your deal. What would you say if they wanted to give you a new contract? And I think my example was, I think that would be ideal, right? I think any player worth their salt would love the opportunity to have their pay and their contract reflecting their production. And, you know, I don't hesitate to say, you know, if you look back the last 4 years, I know there's a lot of other tight ends that maybe get more acclaim and more recognition or, you know, more attention. But if you go back and just look at, you know, this, not only the statistics, but the consistency, the productivity, the durability, all those things, there's nobody that can match up and has done what I've done. And it's just the reality of it. Now, whether or not that can be, you know, adjusted and reflected contractually, you know, we'll see. But the stats and the numbers, they all speak for themselves. And this is a very stat-based world and a very production-based world that we're in. You know that very well. And that's just kind of the way it is right now.
So is there any hope that they could or would give you some type of restructured deal this season?
You know, I don't know. I think, you know, I really don't know. I mean, it's something that obviously we would love. And we believe, you know, we feel like we have a lot of ground to stand on, but as we all know, and you know probably better than anybody, it takes two to really get something like that accomplished. So, you know, we'll see how things go over the summer. We'll see what types of responses we get from the organization and what their thoughts are on my future here and where they see me and their future plans within the organization. And, you know, we'll see if they, you know, I think in my quote to person was, you know, I hopefully they feel the same way that we do about, you know, my standing here, you know, as one of our leaders and one of our more productive players. So we'll see.
Let me ask you a question. Whether you couldn't, could you, would you consider holding out of training camp with 2 years left in your contract, with the fines being what they are, or is that not an option?
No. I think it's early right now. I think as the summer goes on and we, you know, get some feedback from the organization on how they feel, we'll make the best decision that we can. But, you know, I'd be lying if I didn't say, that we feel very strongly about where we should be in that totem pole of top tight ends. And I'd be hard pressed to find anybody that can make a reasonable argument, on the contrary. So we'll see how things go over the summer and we'll take that as it comes.
If they ask for any evidence, just so you know, Greg Olsen, at least 5 touchdown catches in 8 of his last 10 NFL seasons. Cam Newton's favorite target since 2011. He's thrown to you more times for more yards, for more touchdowns than any player in his career. 617 pass attempts, 4,957 passing yards, 30 touchdowns to you, Greg. So there you go.
Appreciate it. I might call you, Adam. Are you going to be available? If I call you, are you going to be on vacation or are you going to be available?
Let me say this. That's a ring that I shouldn't be stepping into, that I do enjoy having conversations about with teams and players when they do call.
It's an interesting dynamic. There's no doubt. And again, I have a great relationship with the entire organization, Mr. Gettleman, Mr. Richardson, Rivera. I mean, the whole crew. I mean, this is not a negative environment. I've gone to all the OTAs, to all the mini camps. This is not by any means a toxic environment or a situation where the two sides seem, fighting or anything like that. It's nothing to do with that. It's just strictly, business should reflect productivity, in our opinion.
You know what, Greg? I will say this. Every player is in a different situation. And the Philadelphia Eagles recently gave Jason Peters a 1-year extension with more guaranteed money. And what's palatable to one player might not be palatable to the next. But even last night, there was another player that I was conversing with. Wants a new deal, 2 years left in his contract, trying to figure out how to do it. And every situation is different, and it just depends on what you're willing to do at this stage of your career with the money that you've made, with the money that you'd like to make. Everyone's different. Odell Beckham Jr. is in a position where he's supposed to make $1.8 million this year. And again, I've said, if it were me, I wouldn't play for that money if I'm Odell Beckham Jr. That's me.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, he is going to make 3 times the money from Nike. And this is the first time he's eligible for a new deal. He's arguably the second most popular player. You're in a situation where you can easily say to them, I've got 2 years left. And if they don't want to do that, and you play it out, okay, 2 years from now, then maybe you are a free agent and somebody's paying you money at that point in time with the way that you've taken care of yourself and produced. But again, you'll have those conversations with those members of the organization, and hopefully something gets done to everybody's satisfaction. That's all we can say.
And that's exactly right. That's the same way we feel on our end, no question.
Everybody knows what's fair and what's not, and what's fair for certain players and what's not. Anyway, we'll get back to the on-field stuff. What have been your early thoughts and impressions on your 2 top picks, Christian McCaffrey and Curtis Samuel?
So today was our first time really working with Christian, and I've met him a few times. I spoke to him on the phone the night he was drafted, and then I saw him a couple weeks back. He was in town, even though he couldn't practice. He was in town. He came to Coach Rivera's charity event, so spent some time with him there. So, but again, today was the first time we actually saw him on the field, in the offense, running around, and he's an impressive guy at first glance. Obviously, we all saw what he did in college. We saw how dynamic he was with the ball and how multiple he could be in the offense. It's, coming out of the backfield as a receiver and running between the tackles, running outside. He's an impressive kid. I think the most impressive thing is, you talk about a young kid, is he 21? But you see him before practice, and he's got a real deliberate warm-up. He's got a real deliberate, way he prepares himself. Some of the other young guys, they don't even know what that means. They just walk out there and just whatever. You see him over in the corner doing his specific exercises, activations, preparation, getting himself ready. He first thing he asked me, we spent some time after practice today. He wanted to go over all the third down pass protection stuff, right? So he's not even worried about the stuff that involves him holding the ball. But, he knows if he wants to be on the field as much as possible, you got to be able to play on third down. And as a running back, that means you got to be able to pass protect and recognize blitzes and coverages and fronts. And that's all he wanted to talk about. So I think for a young kid to have that sort of self-awareness and have that, big picture in mind is – is pretty impressive, you know, aside from his ability, obviously, to run and change. You know, we all knew that kind of stuff, or else you don't get picked, you know, in the top 10 as a running back. So he's, I think he has a chance to be pretty special, and we'll see how, you know, kind of his role defines itself over the next couple weeks and months. But and then Curtis Samuel is another young kid, obviously extremely explosive with the ball in his hand. Kind of that same wide receiver slash running back type player in college with what they did. And again, gives us that speed, gives us that dynamic playmaking ability with the ball in his hand. So, you know, those are two young kids that can come in. But with any young players, you got to kind of bring them along and teach them how things go. But, you know, from a physical standpoint and from a mentality standpoint, I think they're going to be very good.
Greg, from your vantage point, when are you expecting Cam Newton to be healthy and ready to go?
You know, I don't know, to be honest with you. I know there were reports last week that he was going to throw, but then the reports were, you know, maybe, no, he wasn't going to throw. So, you know, we don't really spend a ton of time, you know, asking doctors. We're very confident that the people in charge are going to do what's best for Cam, what's best for the team, both in the short term and long term. But, you know, what I will say is, you know, he's approached this rehab. He's approached his workouts, his conditioning, his running, his weight room stuff as hard as I've ever seen him. And he looks fantastic. Again, I have no idea what he weighs. I don't, you know, obviously get into everybody else's business. But just from a looks perspective and how he runs and watching him in the conditioning this offseason and with the, you know, the way he, you know, he covering ground. He was running with the receivers and leading the pack. I mean, he's physically, he looks great. You know, when he takes that next step, I don't know. I'm assuming it'll be some point between now and camp. I don't know the actual specifics of it, though. But when it's time, it's time. And until he's ready, he'll just continue down the path, I'm sure, that he's been on.
You're not concerned that he won't be ready for, say, the preseason games or even the start of the season?
I mean, nothing I've heard has suggested that. You know, whether or not that's the case or not in a few weeks, I don't know. But I've heard nothing to suggest otherwise. So until that, we're just all kind of in the same place of mind that he's right on track to be where the team thought he would be back when he had the surgery in March, or I want to say it was in March. So that's to our knowledge, that's where everything is.
Greg, people see the flashy dresser and Cam, all the hats, the suits. What don't people know about him behind the scenes?
You know, I wish people could just see how he interacts with kids. We went to his charity event, you know, a bunch of us the other night on Saturday night here in Charlotte. He hosted a really nice dinner event at the convention center, and you know, just people from all over town, and they showed videos, and Cam got up and spoke. And you know, when you see him in those environments, you just see, you know, how much these kids mean, and you know, not only through, you know, his 7-on-7 leagues that he runs, and then not all the foundation work that he does, both for the local children's hospital, which obviously is greatly appreciated by my family with our experience, and the work he does with, you know, the youth of our city and the youth around the country in Atlanta. Just, you know, I just wish people could see him in those environments, because that's when he really flourishes. I mean, I even know my kids, when I bring them to the facility and I bring my boys around and they see Cam, and you know, he lights up with a big smile, and he comes and he calls my youngest son Cheeks, because he's got these chubby cheeks, and the boys just light up. You know, he has an uncanny ability to just make these kids' days, and it's not an act, it's not planned, it's just truly what he is and who and what he is, and he thrives in those environments, and he has a very special ability to relate and impact those kids' lives.
Impressive. All right, Greg, last call, last little feature on this podcast. I'd like to ask three questions, get your answers here. The last time you cried?
Oh, man. You know, it was probably when we got the news about my son. So, yep. You know, it's been a few years now. I don't know if anything will ever compare to that. You know, that was obviously devastating news. And, you know, since that day, I think everything has paled. You know, problems that have been in play since then have all kind of paled in comparison. So, that was you know, a few years back now, and that was kind of a real tough time for our family and obviously personally with everything. So that was there was a lot of tears shed over that year or so.
But TJ's doing well now, right?
He is. He's doing well. He you know, he has his moments, but big picture, he's really been in a good place lately and just living a very normal 4-year-old life. Yep.
Which is all you could ask, right, at this point.
That's all we want.
Last meal on earth, what would it be, Greg?
Pizza. I'm a Jersey guy.
Yep.
Always been. I'm just a, if I could and I wasn't getting old and my metabolism slowing down, I could literally eat pizza 2-3 times a week.
I still love
traditional, good New York style pizza. Living in Chicago those years was tough. You know, finding a traditional New York style pie was not easy. You know, everything was thick and Chicago cut, you know, dish and all that. So I'm a huge pizza guy. So during the season, we have a tradition that every Friday we do family pizza night. We go to just like the local New York style pizza joint, and it's something that as a family we all look forward to. It's a big part of our season weekly tradition.
You know, it's funny. On Thursday nights, I drive home from Bristol, Connecticut, and every single Thursday night I stop at this pizzeria by my house, and I love those 10-15 minutes that I sit down there and woof down 3 slices because it is so good.
There's nothing better.
Oh,
you get a root beer or a Coke or something like that, and you just treat yourself to that one meal during the week that it just brings so much pleasure. So I get it, man. I'm totally with you on
that. It fuels me, and I respect you for not wanting to indulge in pizza 2-3 times a week, because I do have that probably 2-3 times a week.
When I'm retired, that's going to be a no-brainer.
Well, and at that last meal, when you're having your pizza, who are the 4 people that you're bringing to your pizza party?
I mean, it's got to be, I got 3 kids and a wife, so that's That's the perfect answer. You set me up to be dad of the year right there. Kids and a wife who got to be at that dinner. So that couldn't have been better. I don't have to leave anybody out.
On that note, Greg, enjoy Hawaii. Good luck with any contract talks you do have this summer. Hope everything works out, and I really appreciate you taking the time and the thoughtfulness that you did today.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Thanks, Adam.
All right, we recently asked listeners to write in comments and review our podcast on iTunes, and some of you were kind enough to do that. So here's a sampling of a couple of the letters that people sent in. The first from J.R. Sands 1. It says, and I quote, "Adam, you asked to leave a review, so here goes. First, listen to your guest. Early on when discussing his family, you missed that it was his grandfather that had 7 girls, 2 boys. Philip Rivers had to correct you when you referenced that it was his dad. It shows you had some homework to do. Second, you rolled back to asking about his family because it interested you. You said, hey, it's your audience interest that you should be focusing on, not yours. A few of us may find Philip's family stories interesting, but not one person tuned into your podcast to hear more about his 8 kids, not one person. Next, while you did ask about Mike Williams and Keenan Allen, you didn't ask about the Chargers' improved offensive line or the impact that the offensive coordinator has made. You end with the last time you cried and pork chops and sauerkraut. Come on." That's from J.R. Sands 1. What I would say to that, J.R., is yes, you raise a couple of valid points. Philip was basically laying out the family tree of a number of people, and I lost track. That's on me. Simply lost track because he talked about his mother's family, his father's family, his brother's family, all sorts of families, and somehow I mixed up the 9 kids with the 8 kids with the 7 kids and the 2 kids. It happened. The other questions, listen, we brought Philip Rivers on because it was Father's Day, and there aren't many people who married their junior high school sweetheart, who have 8 children with their junior high school sweetheart. And the fact that it was Father's Day, we thought would be interesting to have him talk about his 8 children and the lessons that he hopes to impact on them. Thank you for that letter, though. Then we got a letter from Costco Matt that says, "I really enjoyed the Michael Vick interview. Great topics. I also really enjoy hearing former greats talk about their biggest rivals from their career. I never would have guessed that Vick had a hard time putting moves on Peppers. Vick could shake anyone. I'd love to hear a conversation between you and Pat Kerwin. Pat's the best in the business. Thank you, and keep up the good work. And oh, and one more guest request. SVP Scott Van Pelt is as good as they come to listen to." That's from Costco Matt, and we appreciate that. Hey, we're fans of Pat Kerwin. Love to get him on at some point, the Sirius analyst and SVP, fans of his. We'll try to get him on at some point as well. But we appreciate these letters. We appreciate the comments. We want to do what we can to make this podcast as enjoyable as it possibly can be for you. So continue to send us your comments. Continue to send us your suggestions. And continue to put reviews on iTunes to let us know what we can and can't do better in the future. Thanks for listening, everybody.